What the Tech is brought to you by Glasswire. With Glasswire, you can see your current and past network activity, detect malware, and also detect bad behaving apps on Windows and Android. Use the code CYBER and get 50% off for a limited time. Glasswire.com. By HelloFresh. HelloFresh lets you cook, eat, and enjoy. Go to HelloFresh.com/80WTT and use the code 80WTT to get $80 off, including free shipping. Everybody, I'm Andrew Zarin. Welcome to What the Tech. Of course, as always, I did a different intro today. Haha, joke's on you. I'm joined by Mr. Paul Theriot. How you doing, Paul?
Pretty good.
I started talking and I didn't realize I'm really off today. I just got to tell you, I've had a hellacious couple days. I'm done working for the rest of the year. This is the last show, last What the Tech of the year. And not that I'm glad it's the last What the Tech, but that means that the year is over, and I'm glad that this year is over, because it's been nothing but disaster. It's been a disastrous year.
Yep. Yeah, this has not been a good year.
No. For people who kind of been following the show for a long time and has followed Twit and what Paul does, you may know a good friend of ours from This Week in Radio Tech, Chris Tobin. Chris is one of the most brilliant engineers in broadcasting. He was a VP over at CBS. He had just became the CTO for WBGO, a radio station in Newark, New Jersey, a jazz station. And on Saturday, Kirk from Twit messaged me and told me that he passed away. He had he went into cardiac arrest and shoveling snow in front of the radio station and passed away. And it's been very devastating for this community. I mean, not just, you know, this show, because I don't think a lot of people know, but whenever Paul did remote shows and Mary Jo, Chris was the guy that helped me do all of that. He came to events. A lot of you guys would know him from the Rattle and Hum meetups. He's done shows at Rattle and Hum, and that really was shocking, to the point that I didn't even know how to react, and which is rare, because normally I'm very cautious about stuff like this, and I always try to kind of anticipate something, you know, negativity happening. You can't ever anticipate something like this, but this is the worst of tech. But I wanted to start this off because he was such an instrumental part to my career. Here, a lot of people may not know that. Chris, literally, when I started doing these podcasts in 2009, I met Chris around 2010, 2011. And he really was one of the guys that taught me engineering to some extent. I mean, there's three people I would say Mike Phillips, Chris Tobin, and Kirk Harnack that sat there patiently, all engineers, and taught some, you know, kid that doesn't really have a formal background and said, hey, listen, we're an open book. What do you need? What do you want to know? Let me help you. Let me guide you. And Chris was that guy. We would have conversations for hours at a time, sitting down on Thursdays, having drinks and just talking about radio I would just absorb everything that he had to say. A devastating loss to many people. You know, one of my close friends, I've been numb, I should say, Paul, for the last couple of days. Yeah, I've been extremely numb to this. I almost didn't want to do any shows, but, you know, I thought I kind of want to chug on and talk about this and just talk about it publicly. What a great, great man Chris was. And the amount of his reach isn't just with me. I should just say that he has helped so many people within the broadcasting world, podcasting world, so many people, selfless, never expected a thing in return, just wanted to help people. I just devastating. And I want to take a couple minutes and kind of talk about this because, you know, the podcasting community is very small, regardless of you listen to What the Tech. I imagine majority of our audience listens to you on Windows Weekly with Leo, and we all cross paths and we all kind of intertwine in this weird bubble of podcasting. And Chris was an instrumental part for many, many people over the last decade in this industry. And just my thoughts go out to his family. Just terrible, terrible way to end this year. That was, you know, I could expect that, and I'm going to say this in a joking manner because I kind of want to change the tone a little bit, but if you told me aliens landed, I would believe you over hearing that conversation. Really, it was just a Saturday at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I get this message, and I had to read it because it just didn't resonate. It didn't make sense to me. You know, I know that he was married to Lisa, and my thoughts go out to Lisa. I can't imagine what she's going through right now with this, and his family. He leaves behind a brother and a mother, and I'm sure many others. So just another a great man, and just thinking of you, my friend. So...
If you don't mind, yeah. I didn't know Chris as well as you, but I mean, he was one of those bright lights. And there have been a handful of people in my life where you meet them and you realize, my God, this is one of the nicest people on earth. I mean, he reminds me of my brother, Jonathan, in that way. It's just, if you don't like this guy, there's something wrong with you, you know?
Yeah.
And he did a bunch of work for us. And he set us up that one time. I remember we did a show at CBS.
He did the show at CBS, always,
Yeah, and he was one of those guys. It was always great when he was able to come out and be with us when, you know, back when I used to be able to go to New York, and I look forward to doing that again someday. I wish I could do it with him, you know, but I'm sure what his family, his wife especially, is hearing is what they've known all along, but they'll be hearing it from people they don't know, like people like me, where what an impact that he had and what a great, great guy he was. It's just sad.
You know, tremendous, tremendous impact. You know, last night I was having a couple of drinks and I was talking. My wife adored him. I mean, she absolutely loved him and knows how important he was to all of us. I mean, listen, I built a career on not really working, right? I'm lucky enough. I built this thing. It was a fluke. We started off as a comedy podcast and 13 years later almost. It's become a really nice source of income for me and my family. And Chris really sat me down and said, listen, don't give up. There's something you're doing that's working. This is working. I'm telling you, I work with people in radio. This is the future. Just do it. And this guy there were so many times that I just said, I don't want to do this anymore. And he's like, no, you have to. You got to do this. And the guy was just, there's only a few people that I could say, you know what? I could call this person up and say, hey, what are you doing? I need your help. This guy would drop it and come. I say this. He was a total mensch of a person. One of the nicest people to know and one of the greatest people in the broadcasting industry. Legendary for what he's done. And, you know, for this show, he's been a huge help for every other project we've done. If it wasn't for Chris, I don't think I would be doing this right now. So it just shows you, you know, how it's those small things. This guy never had to sit there and take my phone call 10 years ago when I'm like, hey, I don't know what I'm doing. Can I buy you dinner and can we chat? And he's like, absolutely. You don't have to buy me dinner. I'd love to chat. So. A terrible loss. You know, early in the year, I lost somebody else, a good friend of mine, a police officer. He was a sergeant, 9/11 first responder, and very similar thing. I just got a phone call over the summer saying that he passed away, 59 years old as well. So it's been a non-COVID related. I just want to put that out there too, because a lot of people think when you talk about this, it's good. Non-COVID related. I don't even know if that makes it better or worse. Nothing makes it better, but I don't know. It's terrible, terrible. So I wanted to spend some time on this and talk about him, which I'm going to be talking about him on other shows as well, because I've been asked by 1,000 people to come on and talk about, you know, how instrumental he was. And I said, no, I don't care what time it is. I'll come on and I'll talk about it. So I guess we can move on. It's a difficult moving on, but From that really is the worst.
From the worst of 2020 to the worst in tech in 2020.
Yeah. So to kind of, you know, we do this show. Last week we did the best of it. And obviously, there were a lot of things that you know, I don't like to sit there and make the list because I like to talk about it at the moment. Sometimes there's stuff that's really bad and then we want to kind of dwell on this. But we have so many that goes on both, right? That goes on the worst of and the best of.
You got to have a guideline here. I mean, there's probably 20 items each for either one of us on each list, I mean, that you could use.
Yeah. I want to, you know what? Let's make this a little fun. You know what I'm going to go with first? I'm going to go with Intel.
Wow. Nice.
I'll explain why. This was a terrible year for Intel in the sense of they had supply issues. Yep. Another year where they did not have a good mobile chip to any extent. And the icing on the cake was the Apple announcement a couple of weeks ago that they are now moving to their own chipset and they're going to be eventually leaving Intel. Also, which I kind of wanted your opinion on, rumors are circling that Microsoft is working on their own ARM-based chipset to possibly move forward with. Is that, now before we go into why this is bad for Intel, obviously we know, but we'll break it down. I know that Microsoft has been working on something like this, but is this a response to Apple or is this something that they were planning on doing and they were always going to announce it at this time?
Well, they didn't announce it. This was leaked by
Bloomberg.
Yeah. But no, you're right. Intel's on my list as well. Intel's problems in general are just like Intel's problems with Microsoft are something that didn't just happen this year. They've been happening, right? So Microsoft last year partnered with AMD for the first time to create a custom chipset for its Surface laptops. Microsoft 3 years no, that's not true. 2 years ago, a year ago, I guess. Actually, it was a year ago. Partnered with Qualcomm to make their own chip for a particular Surface model. This stuff has been happening. Like it's been happening. And the problem for Intel is that in the PC space, they've lost ground to AMD. They've lost the technical lead to TSMC and other fabricators. They can't get even to 10 nanometer reliably, let alone 5 or 7 nanometer. Apple's at 7 now, or at 5 now, and AMD is at 7, I think. But the bigger problem really is the data center stuff, and that's where the Microsoft announcement really factors in. It's really more about data centers than it is about PCs, because this is the volume market for chipsets outside of mobile. And when you think about the advantages that ARM has over traditional CIS chipsets like the Intel stuff, It all comes down to power management and heat and efficiency. And as much as we in our space tend to think about computers and mobile devices and things, really the advantages of those chipsets make tons of sense for these cloud data centers. And so I fully expect Intel to, I think this is, we're going to look back on this year as that kind of inflection point for Intel where they lost it.
Yeah.
Even though right now they make tons of money and they're in okay shape and blah, 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 whatever.
And they'll be doing it for many, many, many years. But
well, because inertia is a wonderful thing. But unless they make some major changes, maybe buy another company or something, they're screwed. I think Intel is circling the drain right now.
Yeah.
And that's a crazy thing to say because, like I said, they're a huge company. But the future does not look good for Intel.
Listen, for a number of reasons, right? I think the desktop mindset is something of the past, right? So that's a big part. That's a big point of this. But
Andrew, this company got rid of its mobile specific chipsets. They actually had an ARM license at one point. They got rid of that stuff years ago. They sold off their 5G chipset work to Apple last year, I think. I mean,
is it a leadership issue? Is it a... Because, I mean, here's the story for a lot of the younger kids that watch us, because now I'm an old man at 37. Intel's major success obviously comes from the late 90s boom of technology, going from the 486 to the Pentium. That was a big part. But the real thing was the the core processing of Intel chipsets. When they, I think people don't remember this, but in the late 90s, early 2000s, AMD was really on their butts with those K6 and K7 chipsets, the Athlons, And
well,
it was
64-bit stuff, and Intel had
better.
It was one big embarrassment. They had to copy AMD, you know?
Yeah.
They basically used the same design.
And Intel, luckily, I mean, they purchased that Israeli tech company that developed.
That's what led to the, that's why they even have Core chips. That's exactly. That's what came out of that. The first chip they released was something called the Core Solo, which was a single core chip, which today sounds hilarious. And then the second chip was the Core 2 Duo, right? Core Duo, and then Core 2 is the probably second gen dual core chipset. And then, of course, you know, today this quad and higher chipsets. I mean, but Intel could have fallen behind in both of those times, right? When the transition is 64-bit and the transition to these kind of mobile-oriented, like what we now think of as U-series processors. But they bought themselves some time. They were able to buy and catch up and do fine. What's happening now with ARM is not the same situation. I this is death by a thousand cuts. Yeah. They're getting attacked from every direction.
Yeah. So just to remind people, I mean, it was really based on that core technology, the quad, the multiple cores, and the hyper-threading and stuff like that. And now we've reached a different point where they need to scale down. And that was the biggest hurdle that they faced. They've had a tremendous difficulty doing this. But now with, you know, not that Mac sales are their end all be all, but Apple has a great ability to change the perception of the consumer. They've done this. They did this with the Mac. The MacBook Air changed the perception of what a laptop should look like. I mean, forget about the performance, forget about the people not liking it, but it changed the way we look at a laptop, the way that we look at a computer. Aesthetically, it was stunning. The Macs are beautiful, and that was a trend that we saw happen within the PC world with a lot of the clones. Now the PC world has its own identity. They've done a great job. The Surfaces have a great identity. HP has reinvented themselves from the early 2000s to now. Lenovo, everybody's putting out unbelievably attractive products that will work great. But what happens when the consumer no longer recognizes it's a necessity to have an Intel chipset, or when the OEMs say, you know what, why am I going to go with an Intel and do the licensing and use someone else's? I could just develop my own ARM-based chipset.
Well, I mean, that's still an expensive and risky kind of endeavor. Some of the bigger companies can do that. Microsoft can. I mean, I'm not sure it matters so much if Microsoft does on the PC side, but I mean, the bigger change here is kind of architectural and is industry wide. And I think more important than the PC though, is just the other stuff, right? And mobile and data center. So, you know, Apple has definitely changed the story on the client side with the PC or the Mac in their case. And we'll see how that impacts the PC space. But at the end of the day, you know, the PC market is sub 300 million units a year. Millions of phones and tablets are sold every year, all running on these ARM chipsets. And then the data center and the IoT kind of market, the smart home stuff, these are all going ARM. It's just the way it is. And at some point, you've got this giant pie with different size slices. And Intel is cut out of every single slice except for one, the PC. And even if Intel retained the PC 100%, which they won't, it's the smallest slice on the pie by far.
Yeah.
So they're right now they're the biggest player in the smallest market there is for personal computing. Yeah. And it's just going to get worse.
Listen, we're back to the core rush. I think that's going to be the future of the next 5 years of computing. You know, we're talking about Apple possibly putting a 32-core ARM-based chip in their Mac Pros.
Well, it's a different architecture. I mean, that's part of it. But, you know, AMD has not experimented. I mean, AMD has implemented a multi-core approach on what is essentially, right, an x86-style chipset, right, for PCs. You see, I don't even know what their PC processors scale to, but they are 12 or more cores, I believe. They're up there. They're really up there. I mean, and Intel has some stuff that kind of edges into that category, but for the most part, Intel's chipsets are 4-core. And then you get to i9 and 6 or 8-core, wherever they go. But Yeah, it's a different way of looking at the world. It's not the megahertz wars of the past. And the one area where Intel had been successful is just ramping up the performance. The last time they did it, and this will be like probably their last hurrah in the PC space, is eighth generation Core chipset, which would have been, what, 3 years ago, 2 years ago?
Three years?
They doubled the cores, right? Remember, yeah. They went from dual core to quad core. There was no price increase. There was no battery life impact. You just got more cores, like double the cores. And now when you're giving kind of PC buying advice to somebody, the basic advice is just make sure you get a quad core. That's the base. And then we talk from there.
Yeah.
So that was like the last trigger they were able to pull. And it's really just based on the success they'd always had in the past. And they really don't have anywhere to go from here, because the 32 core thing you're talking about, or whatever, I think the cores today and the M1 are what, processor cores, eight GPU cores. On the CPU side, they're split probably evenly, but I'm not 100% sure. But normally on ARM, you see evenly split between what they call performance and efficiency cores. And this is the type of architecture you see in a system that was designed from the ground up to be used in a mobile device. It's not going to have fans, right? And battery life is of the utmost importance. Whereas the PC space to date, it's been more about performance than efficiency.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. I want to go into more topics. Obviously, there's a ton that we could talk about. But before we do, I want to talk about a great sponsor of ours and a company that I absolutely love. And it's HelloFresh. Listen, the holidays are here. We're 2 days away from Christmas. And the last thing I want to do is eat leftovers once. I got my interns here. Look at this. Oh, look at this. Beautiful. He's bringing the HelloFresh. No, I don't cook it today. Thank you. Our intern cooks our HelloFresh.
He showed me for some reason. Yeah.
Hey, Jamie. Here. Can you pull up HelloFresh on the screen? Thank you. No, I absolutely love it. And I hate eating the leftovers for weeks and weeks at a time. So I just got my HelloFresh order yesterday. It came in and I'm like, this is perfect. You know what? I'm going to cook for everybody on Christmas and Christmas Eve. And after that, you know what? I want to have something fresh. And that's what they do. Here's a great offer. Use the offer code. Go to HelloFresh.com/80WTT. That's 80WTT. Or you could use the code 80WTT at checkout, and you get $80 off, including free shipping. What they do, it's a convenient, no-contact delivery to your door for easy home cooking for the family, for you or the family. I mean, they have a family plan. They got a vegetarian plan. They got a whole bunch of these. So the recipes are easy to follow. It's simple steps, super easy. They put all the ingredients in there. Do you know how many times I've had a recipe? I'm like, you know what? I'm going to make this, and now I need sesame oil. Where the hell am I going to get sesame oil at 7 o'clock at night? Do I want to go to the store and get it? No. You know what? HelloFresh, if it requires sesame oil, guess what? It's in there. You don't have to go and spend money just for one thing that you're cooking. They provide you with all the ingredients that you need. They have images. It's super easy. And your dinner is on the table within 30 minutes. It's awesome. HelloFresh is also the first global carbon neutral meal kit company, which is really cool. It's delivered pre-portioned ingredients, so you're not overbuying, you're not underbuying, which is a tremendous burden, like I said, and it's a great deal. Listen, start the new year off right. You want to try something new, you want to eat better, you want to eat cleaner, fresh ingredients, instead of ordering in every night, this is the way to go. HelloFresh.com, use the code 80WTT and get $80 off, including free shipping. I want to thank HelloFresh for supporting the show. I absolutely love HelloFresh, actually. So easy to talk about them when you love the product. I want to bring up something that it's funny. Sometimes you see a product launch and you know it's going to fail. And Quibi was one of those for me.
Yep. It gets on my list, too. Yep.
$1.75 billion invested in this. And it failed terribly. Now, for people who don't know what it was high quality content that was being created, like the Kardashians had products in there. A lot of people had secondary and third style shows on there, but they were short format and they were vertical. Right. The shows. There's a huge, or at the time, there was a huge portion of people that thought people want to watch television like this. in a vertical style did not work. Did you watch? Did you consume any content from Quibi? No. I think their entire budget went to marketing instead of content.
Yeah, and they tried everything they could to sell the service to successful services, and nobody even looked at it. It was like no, thank you. You know, the dark side to this, though. So Quibi's kind of come and gone, and whatever, we can joke about it, but this is part of a bigger problem with this year, which is that there are just all of a sudden too many streaming services. You know,
tremendous amount.
Yeah, and it was already confusing enough. You know, when I go back, like 3 years ago when I moved to Pennsylvania, I wrote a lot about cord cutting, and I've kind of filled in the gaps in the time since as necessary. But, you know, at the time, you could get something like YouTube TV for $35 a month, and they were still lacking in some channels, of course, and those things kind of came on. But you could make two cases for cord cutting, and one was that you were going to save a lot of money. And yeah. The other one was that you now it was very easy to go from service to service. There were no long-term contracts, et cetera, et cetera. But unfortunately, what's happened to streaming services is that it's kind of like the cablization of streaming services.
Oh, and it's so even worse. It's even worse.
I just Hulu is up to Hulu with live TV and no ads is like $90 a month or something now. I think YouTube TV is probably $75
up from
$35 at launch, right? In just a few short years, the prices of these services have more than doubled. And it's because all the content creators are now doing to them what they already did to cable, which is ruin it. And what this has caused, and of course the switch away from cable into these kind of decentralized services has caused the content makers to make their own services. So things like, you know, CBS All Access, which came out last year, or Peacock, which is the NBC version of that.
Yeah.
ABC, which is owned by Disney, which, you know, blah, blah, blah. They have at least four different services. I know they have Hulu and Disney Plus and ESPN Plus, and I think some other thing. And it's like, guys, you know, you can't really save that much money or any money now by going to streaming services.
No. There's no saving money.
But you still have the advantage of going from service to service. And I often talk about, you know, you can do Netflix this month and do Hulu next month or however you want to do it, you know, based on what's out there and save money that way. But it's just a confusing mess, you know? And a lot of times you'll read a story about some great new series and you'll be like, oh, this sounds awesome. Where is it? And you're like, what is this? Where is this service? Like, you don't even know what it is. Like Epix has a service, like a, you know, like it's,
yeah,
there's just, it's too much. And Quibi was part of the problem, and it was probably a really public, you know, example of the problem, but
it was also targeting a younger generation media consumption. And think about how specific you're looking at the people that are on TikTok and Snapchat. That you took you took the TikTok model of vertical videos, shorter format. Obviously, we're talking a couple minutes instead of a couple seconds here. But you have TV executives and you have tech executives like I believe HP's former CEO, right? Meg.
Meg Whitman, the former, wasn't she former governor?
Yes.
Gubernatorial candidate.
She was part of it. A lot of Hollywood people were behind it, and it was just a lack of understanding of how people consume this stuff. There's no circumstance in the world that's going to make me want to watch a show like that vertically.
Well, this is like when old people hear about hip stuff that young kids are doing and they try to emulate it, and they have no idea what they're talking about.
But man, what a push it was marketing-wise for this thing.
Yeah. Yep.
Huge push for it. Terrible.
Disaster.
So that's definitely on my list here because I think it mm-hmm. Well, listen, you kind of bring up, you kind of touched on something else. Cord cutting, right? Whole concept was, for most people, was that I'm going to eliminate the service because I want to save money. I don't want to pay the box rental fee. I don't want to pay for cable. Right. I don't want to pay $120 a month. But now in reality, if you want, if you have YouTube TV and you want HBO, you're paying $120-something.
That's crazy.
Already. And it is crazy. It's nuts because I'm looking at what my bills are now because everybody is, right? We're in that mode again where we're like, okay,
you know what's going to happen, Andrew, too? They're going to get rid of device rental fees from cable companies. Like it's going to be regulated away.
Yeah.
I think they're starting with device rentals for internet routers. But like one of the big tips of 2021 is going to be, want to save money on TV? Get cable. Yeah. You know, like if you're already, like I'm paying RCN, for example, I pay them only for internet access. We're at the point now where it's like, just get a cable box. You know, if you want to watch football games on Sunday or, you know, live news or stuff like that, get the basic set of channels. You'll pay less now for cable. Just get it.
Yeah.
I mean, you're still going to get, you know, Netflix and whatever else you choose to buy, to pay for it every month. But I mean, I think for a lot of people, if it's about saving money and having access to the broadest range of content, cable might make sense in ways that, you know, 3 years ago, I was like, oh no, I'm walking away from this. It's such a weird turnaround. It's such a terrible development.
Well, even satellite TV, right? Satellite is suffering even worse. Equivalent. Yeah. DirecTV right now, AT&T, there was a story that came out that they don't know what to do with DirecTV because already they have a bad reputation, right? From the 90s of if it rains, you don't have service. But now, you're paying for your internet bill already. Your internet is, you know, $80 or $70. Plus, now you got YouTube TV. Now you're at $140. Plus, now you have Netflix and Hulu. You're spending like $300 a month at the end of the day if you have all these services.
You
know,
so you can sit for on what? The couch and get fat.
Yeah. For what?
It's like, what? Yeah, I know. You know. It's a mess. And that's, Quibi is a great example of the worst one of all, but it's kind of a symptom, I think, of a wider problem.
Listen, I don't know. I don't know if this is going to be the year or not, but there's definitely going to be some sort of moment that people realize that they're spending way too much money on content they're not consuming. On top of that, also, listen, we have a Patreon. Oh. You have Patreon content. You have YouTube subscription. You could join for bonus material here, bonus material there. I think people are going to start realizing, hey, what do I really need?
You know, this is going to sound like it's a little off topic, but it's right in this channel. It's the same kind of thing. You know, Eddie Van Halen died a month ago or whatever, terrible, tragic loss, you know, and one of the things that's come out of that is a bunch of people that knew him have started posting videos and things that stuff that's just not been out there. And there's a studio, a recording studio in LA called Sunset Studio. They only fairly recently, I think, started up or they restarted their YouTube channel. And they did it before he died, and they were just posting a couple of videos about whatever. They've been around for, you know, forever. I don't know the time frame exactly, but Van Halen recorded their first 5 albums at this place. So because Eddie Van Halen died, they brought in the engineer who was working on a box set that they ended up scrapping because their lead singer had come back. But it was all this great inside information. They just did a 2-part amazing. I mean, it's, if you're into music and stuff like this, you got to watch this. Dweezil Zappa did a 2-part multi hour interview. It was one of the best things I've ever listened to in my life, which is all these stories from the old days. And then they're going to have Ted Templeman come in sometime in the next couple of weeks. He's the guy who produced their first 6 albums. And so it's just for music lovers, it's just a great thing that's happening. Okay, that's cool. But one of the things that Dweezil Zappa was talking about, and one of the things the studio is also involved in, is this notion of supporting artists who can't make money through YouTube or through Spotify and all the stuff. And they want to have a way to reach directly into their audience bases. And you kind of have a relationship with the band. So if you're into a particular artist or a group, they'll have these, you know, their own websites with Patreons and ways to pay them directly. And you can, you know, in the future, there'll be special concert things where you can get tickets to them and there'll be better seats and all this kind of stuff. But I'm listening to this and I'm like, I completely understand it. Like from the perspective of a recording artist, things have gone south. They can't make money releasing albums. They can't tour this year because of COVID. So they're not making any money and they're trying to figure out a way. They just want to live like all of us want to live. But the problem is they're going to do the music what we just talked about with video content. If you like the band Green Day, you're going to go to greenday.com. And if you like the band Van Halen, you're going to go to vanhalen.com. And if you like the band, you know, Dweezil Zappa, you go to dweezilzappa.com or whatever it is. And I get it, but the system's broken.
Yeah.
You know, you shouldn't have to go to, I like 17 bands a lot. So am I going to feed each one of these guys $1 or $5 a month or something to get access to their exclusive content? Like it's too bad that the system we have now, which is basically YouTube and Spotify, doesn't work, you know?
Yeah. Well, and,
it's the same thing, isn't it? Like it's just music versus TV and movie.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
You brought up YouTube and I kind of want to touch on this a little bit. I didn't even have this as a consideration, but YouTube's DMCA takedown system, and essentially everybody's, right, is severely flawed. So, like, crazy flawed. And this year, we really did see it kind of come to a head. So, where people that were advocates of this are now saying this is broken.
Yeah. Well, here's one of the ways it's broken. Like, if you go to YouTube, because I wasn't sure where you were going with this, but this is something I've experienced. Like, we talked a lot this year about how much both of us have spent time watching YouTube. Like, we spent a lot of time on YouTube. And a lot of that stuff is clippy type stuff. It's like 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 7 minutes.
Aliens. So that's all I watch.
Aliens. Okay. So what I see on YouTube is a lot of examples of like, here's like a song, like one song from a band that I happen to like. So that's why it's showing up. I'm trying to find one now. I can't find one, but it's just a song. It's not a video of the song. It's literally just the music. So if you click on it, it just shows the album. And it plays the song, and it was posted by Bob Smith, not by the band. So I'm thinking to myself, well, how does this work? I just found one. How does this work? So it's like, well, okay, can I report this, right? And it's like, yeah, you can report it. And there's all these different things. You know what's not on here?
What?
If it doesn't infringe, like I can't say this infringes on the rights of the copyholder. I can't. The only way I can do that is if I own the content.
Or if you claim that you own it, yeah.
Yeah, so if I'm a fan of a band, like for example, Paul McCartney, I just found, this is the one I found. Paul McCartney just released a new album, right? If you go to iTunes, I'm sure he's charging 10 or 15 bucks for it. You can get it streaming over Spotify or whatever else. But this guy, published the whole thing. So the video is just the front and the back of the album. And if you go to report it, there's nothing I can report it for. It's not terrorism. It's not child abuse. It's not a harmful or dangerous act. The only thing, it's one of the choices is infringes my rights. So Paul McCartney would have to go here to do this. Yeah. So this thing is going to sit here on YouTube until Paul McCartney complains about it.
So here's how it works. And again, it's very sucks. Broken. So I'll give you the both sides of this. Obviously, okay. You don't want somebody profiting off of your work, right? That's the problem. So if this show is really popular and some guy takes it and starts uploading full episodes, that's a problem, right? I have the right to claim a DMCA takedown notice. Mm-hmm. However, majority of takedown notices that are being issued right now are a sham. And I'll explain why. Here's a great example of how this is broken, right? My wife has an Etsy store.
Yeah.
Last year,
you're going to figure out a way to work in your wife's Etsy store.
I know. This is the new thing. I'm just working it in.
Is this the new thing?
This is the new thing.
Etsy is both the best and the worst.
Well, okay. this actually speaks volumes about the whole system being broken with these copyright laws. She has an Etsy store. Last year, middle of holiday season, all of a sudden, her store was shut down for 120 DMCA takedown notices. A competitor that sells a similar product decided that this is how they're going to target counter my wife's store being successful. They went through every single listing and flagged every single one for copyright infringement on their products. Okay? None of it. I mean, listen, similarity wise, they sell the same style conceptual products, but it's all different. They claim that they own the rights to the artwork that we're using. So what do? I do a response, right? Like now they did the takedown. I now have to respond with proof that this isn't the case. Then once it goes through, I guess, the process of 1 month, now it's up to the company, Etsy, to say, okay, now we're going to restore the shop, which they did 2 months later. Now what can I do now? I have to now sue these people for tortious interference and claim.
You could also issue a takedown order against them for violating your ownership rights.
Then it becomes a pissing contest, right? Then I'm lying and they're lying and it's a whole thing.
You keep them offline for 2 months. I mean,
I can. I could have. What I wanted to do was sue them and sue them for tortious interference because it's also a federal crime to do this. Right. So I sent a very nice email to them, and they decided that they do not want to compete and sell this product anymore. But the fact that I had to do this in this manner, you know what there should be? Hey, what's the listing? Is this it? Okay, where's your proof? Where is your proof that you own this content, Paul? You don't have to show that proof. I could, God's honest truth, I could go claim anything, claim it, and automatically the judgment is in my favor, and it's now their responsibility to fight it. Nonsense. That's crazy. And you're seeing this with content creators. We had an ad. We had an advertiser where the advertiser provided us the graphical opening, and in 1 month, we got a DMCA takedown notice by another company. You know what it was? It was a photo of a Microsoft device. I forgot which device it was. It could have been a Surface. It could have been something. We showed the image.
That's very common. We got hit by one of those on my website this year. Some goon trying to collect money.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's fair use. If I have it up for 3 seconds, listen, it's a totally broken system. The fact that there's no answer here because the law is outdated and there's nothing you could do when that's the case unless you rewrite.
The law is outdated, but these companies, YouTube and whoever else they're just set up to protect themselves. You know, they're not doing a good job of protecting legitimate copyright holders. And they don't offer any way for a whistleblower to come in because they would be overwhelmed by complaints, right? I mean, I'm sure that's why. But it's astonishing to me that Paul McCartney can release a new album and it's just available for free on YouTube. And YouTube should be liable for that, you know?
Listen, that's a slippery slope we're going down, right? And that's a big question of, are you a publisher or are you a pipe? Yeah. And that's going to be a discussion over the next...
Both.
They're both. That's the reality.
They're a publisher and a pipe. They're also an ad engine of which they are deriving most of the revenues. And this to me makes them culpable. You know, this is how they're guilty. But anyway,
It's very interesting. And I definitely think that there should be a conversation around this because we have hit a point where the next couple of years, and I don't really have this issue happen too often, but I have people that, you know, they do a news-based show. And almost every show now, they're afraid because they're going to get some sort of takedown. Which is
nonsense. If it's news-based, you're literally – this is the definition of fair use. If you're reporting on an incident, you need – you know, I mean, obviously, if it's – depending on the content and the type of content and yada, yada, yada. I mean, certainly at the very least should – push people toward the owner of the, you know, whoever created it, whatever. But yes, this is the definition of fair use.
Yeah. I want to continue this conversation and I want to go into the big topic here and I really want to tiptoe around this and not make it a political thing because everything is so politically charged. But I think Paul and I are going to do a good job at this next topic after this. But I want to talk about a great sponsor, and that's Glasswire, a new sponsor on the show. A lot of you guys absolutely love this service, love this company. The amount of feedback I've gotten is unbelievable. A couple of weeks ago, we gave away a Surface Duo thanks to Glasswire. It was phenomenal. And now they're sponsoring the show. And the reason why I absolutely love it is because this has been very easy for me to tell people, install this on your computer and see what's happening. See what your network traffic is. If you do a podcast, you're doing live content. We were talking about, a lot of my friends do this. The amount of issues that they have that they don't know about is unbelievable. I was recently doing a show with somebody and they couldn't figure out why the connection was so poor. They were connected to a VPN and they had no idea because it was a computer that they borrowed. But you know what? I told them, install Glasswire and see what's hogging the bandwidth. And they found it, which is great. You could detect bandwidth hogs with the app that slowed down your connections. You could see what apps are phoning home without your permission. Instantly know when a new unknown device has joined your Wi-Fi network. See what apps are slowing down your connection in real time. Block bandwidth wasters, spying apps, data hogs. You could detect malware as well. It's a great job. You also get alerts when there's any kind of changes to your DNS server without your permission. Did malware change your Windows host files? Glasswire knows and will warn you of this. And listen, I highly recommend, go to glasswire.com now. download the service. They have a pay service as well, but download the service. You could check it out, see how you like it. It's one popular feature, by the way, of Glasswire is that is how we have the how they have the Virus Total API built into the software. And it's 100% free for anybody, so you just turn it on in your settings. Then every network related app will be analyzed by Virus Total. Very cool. Very cool stuff. These guys are great. I absolutely love them. I highly recommend you check them out. Glasswire.com. I want to thank Glasswire for supporting What the Tech. So the internet is on my list of the worst the of internet. 2020. The entirety of the internet.
That's incredible.
Last week we were talking about, and this is going to, I know we're going to get a lot of messages about this, so I kind of want to go into
it. This is not what I thought you were going to say.
Oh, what were you going? What do you think you were going
to say? I thought you were going to talk about like the Chinese stuff, like TikTok, Huawei.
Let's go with that. Yeah, terrible.
I now need to know what's wrong
Can
with
I tell
the internet?
You, I secretly love TikTok. Secretly love TikTok. I'm on TikTok every night. I seriously, it's one of the things. I just go through TikTok. And
you
I
understand it's usurping our democracy and that.
Listen, luckily for me, I don't work for the government, so my phone doesn't need to be clean wiped. Listen, I get it. Right. You work for the government. I kind of don't want you to have TikTok on your government issued phone. You know, maybe I don't want that. Yeah. Maybe I want you just to work for me. You know, work for the country.
But what's wrong with the internet?
So the internet, I don't know if you know this, is a cesspool, Paul. We've mentioned this.
Oh, maybe I do have this. I have this under social media.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, social
media.
This
is like misinformation and conspiracy theory.
So there's numerous parts to this, and there is no – I'm going to tell you right now. I don't have a solution to fixing this, right?
Okay.
The I want to present this in the best forward way, right?
I'll tell you what.
You know what I want to say
so much
sometimes?
About offending anybody.
Just I know, but everybody gets
it. What's wrong?
I have a big problem. I think anonymity is going to be, at the end of the day, the demise of the internet as we know it today. And I'm going to tell you why. Obviously, anonymity is a great aspect of the internet. If you are a whistleblower, if you are reporting on atrocities happening in areas of the world that you normally wouldn't have the freedom to talk about, yes, it is very much needed, and there are services for that. But we look at Twitter, right? Twitter's a great example of this. I use Twitter. I thought I used Twitter like a normal person, but I guess I'm wrong. I don't put my dirty laundry on there. I don't argue with people. I don't get into political, deep political conversations on Twitter. I use it as a happy place. And I always felt that that's how the internet is. I've always used it as for positivity. However,
you're using Twitter wrong, Andrew. That's exactly
I am. I know that's
not
the problem.
What it's for.
That's the problem.
Not it.
Now, I'm a little bit different. Would I be a dick if I was not doing a show and I did not have my name associated to a profile? I don't think so, because that's not me. But
But hold on a second. You know, there's a power of being anonymous that I think a lot of people don't even consider. You know, would you be more likely to be a dick knowing that no one could come after you?
Probably.
Actually, probably, right? Yeah. I mean, you're not inherently a dick, but I mean, you might be more inclined to lash out at people knowing no one was coming after you. Like, no one could, right? I mean, I there's definitely a power to it.
There is a power to it. And just, you know, it was always, like, I would see it, like, especially with technology, right? Like, somebody was, oh, well, you're an idiot because you like a bag. But that's stupid. That's fine. But now we've got into... Sure. Deep political discussions with total strangers from the other side of the country, and you guys are now arguing, what is the point? And I think forget about the discourse and the discussions, but there is some really bad stuff happening. People are doxing each other. They're contacting relatives, and because it's of a difference of opinion. And I don't know what the solution here is going to be. Listen, we as human beings, this is how we are. I don't care how far evolved we are, and we pretend we're this civilized, we're in the future. We're better than this. We're not. It just shows you that we're not. We don't have tolerance. By human nature, right. We are not a tolerant group for other thought processes that totally invoke on what we believe. We have a big problem with this historically. I don't know if you know this. For thousands of years, Paul, this has been a problem. Yeah. Now what we have is the availability that you could talk to anybody on this planet with different mindsets, different beliefs, different religious beliefs, personal beliefs, moral beliefs, everything. And now we expect everybody to be in line with our thought process. It is one thing to not agree on a political person or a political affiliation. It's another thing to become a trash human being. And this year, on top of COVID, on top of shutdowns, on top of financial burdens, on top of the presidential issues, this has now turned people into the worst version of themselves. And I have a libertarian mindset. I don't subscribe to any political belief at all. I have my own beliefs. That's how you should be. I don't like to be tagged. I don't like to be grouped into a team. This isn't basketball. This isn't the NFL. I'm not rooting for the Giants. To root for a group like, a team, it's silly to me, but that's just me. The big problem I have is it's not whether or not you want to fund welfare and I don't want to fund welfare. My problem is, how are we having these discussions? How are these discussions happening? It's very accusatory. It's aggressive. And this is what we've become. So how do you change that culture? And you can't. And this is what I made the joke last week.
Can't.
No, we can't. I made the joke last week about I would love to have a panel of guys that are way smarter than me doing this. Like Tom Merritt, I think he's one of the smartest people when it comes to this stuff. I would love to have him on to talk about what he thinks.
You need people who think differently. One example of this, I don't know if I was on Twitter on Sunday night. And it was amazing because that was for me that situation. I was on the show with Steve Gibson and Leo, obviously, but also Jeff Jarvis. And, Steve and Jeff are smarter than I am, and they have different viewpoints and they have different areas of expertise or whatever. But we were talking about autonomous vehicles, cars that drive themselves. And Steve said, we were working on this in the 70s. It's impossible.
Yeah.
And it's not that like computer science progresses to the point where it becomes possible. It's literally impossible. But he said, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he said, we're approaching this problem from the wrong angle. The problem isn't cars having to drive on streets with people who are driving their own cars or people across the street. The problem is the roads. Mm. If you want this to work, you got to change the roads. Put something in the road that the cars can follow, not have them look at the crazy shit that's painted on streets that's different everywhere and have them figure that out. The streets need to be consistent. And when you hear something like that, you're like, right. Right. We have been going after the wrong thing. And by the way, solving the problem in the way that he described would be no less expensive and no more expensive, I should say, than doing it the way we're doing it now. He's right.
Yeah.
In fact, in many ways, it means that cars would become a lot more like trains. Right. Which is kind of interesting. But anyway, he's right.
If the road is depicting where you're going and these cars are intelligent enough, you know what?
Well, if it was consistent,
that we're not going to, if it was consistent and it worked, right? You need a good track record.
You would
be flying at 95 miles an hour and this roads are driving us.
That's right. That's right. Anyway, I just bring that up as an example because it just happened and it's fresh in my mind and I thought it was genius and he is a genius. But we need that kind of thinking to be applied to the spread of misinformation and conspiracy theory on social media, on the internet in general, on news, on whatever. I mean, we've already talked about this a lot this year. I mean, I don't know that there's much more we can say, but I can't solve it. I don't have the brain cells. We collectively can't. You and I aren't going to solve this problem. But you're right. It's not unique to this year, but it's gotten worse every year. And of course, this year between COVID and the election, it has reached a fevered pitch that is just kind of unprecedented.
I'm an optimist, but I really hope that things change, right? It's a new,
but I don't
forget about who you wanted for president, but it's a new president. It's a new start for everything, right? In 2021, vaccines here, things are changing a little bit. I don't know if it's going to be for the better or for the worse. I can't tell you that because I
be
can't.
For the better.
Well, no, I'm saying
I can tell you that.
Well, I'm telling financial outcomes, right? If there's going to be an economic fallout, because we still, the other shoe hasn't dropped yet, and we were talking about that. But I hope, I really do, I really hope people step back and they think about what's happened. Like, I know families, and I wish I was exaggerating this. I know families that have not spoken because they have a difference of opinion.
But this is, like I said, we can't, we're not going to solve this. We can't.
No, we can't.
All we can do is just say, look, this is, everyone knows.
But here's my question to you, right? Do you think, really, because listen, I we're talking about smart people. You're smarter than me. Do you think any kind, do you think, and I'm going to use the wrong words here. Do you think Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, for example, they're going to come to this realization where they say, listen, we need, I understand anonymity, but we need to do something other than having this free for all where anybody could sign up. Facebook, you need your real name, obviously, for Facebook, but you got to sign up and we need to know at least what this is.
This is related to the thing I talked about earlier with YouTube and being able to report a copyright violation. These things are not, all these things, whether the social media services like Twitter or Facebook or YouTube or whatever, they're set up to protect themselves, you know. And on the one hand, there is a wonderful, you know, libertarian kind of thing to everyone can publish anything and we all have freedom.
Doesn't work like that, though, the reality.
But it doesn't work. Yeah, it doesn't work. I don't finding, like I said, I can't solve, I don't have an answer. I don't know. In my own little world, I've raised this issue with the team of people I work with many times this year. I want to understand how someone can sign up for my site. They have to provide an email address of some kind, and then they publish spam. So I want to know why that happens. How it is not hard to require to have a system where the first five things they post have to go through me.
Yeah.
And I approve them. And once I do that, then they get to do whatever they want. And then they get monitored normally, like, because I see this stuff every day and blah, 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 blah. And nothing ever happens. And the whole year's gone by. And I just, this morning I went through the comments, there was some spam. And once again, in my brain, I thought for probably the 52nd time this year,
why can't we do that?
Why the frick don't we have a thing in place where we verify who these people are? Like I I've talked about, I play on Xbox Live when I play video games. You have a gamer tag, which is right there, a slice of being anonymous. And my gamer tag is not Bob in Akron or, you know, some stupid name, some kind of humorous name someone thought up, or some stupid sexual or childish name. It's my name. If you see you're playing against someone named Paul Thurrott on Xbox, that's me.
Yeah.
And that's the choice I made. But that's not the choice most people make. It's like when you go play bowling and you're like, I want to, you know, your name's going to be up on the thing. And you're like, you come up with a stupid name that you can all laugh at, you know. It's cute in a bowling alley, but when you're out in the world and the internet talking about how COVID isn't real and now the vaccine they're making isn't real, it's like, dude, at some point your voice maybe shouldn't be heard.
Yeah.
So I can't, like I said, I can't solve it. It's just,
there's no evolution. There's no fixing this. And the other problem here
maybe
is,
maybe there is, but I don't like know. I said, it needs smart people thinking differently.
Exactly. They need to think differently. The current model doesn't work, because here's the other problem, right? Fact checker, right? Fact checkers. I got just, who's fact checking? What are we fact checking? What are we not happy with? Sure. What words affected? Like, I got a suspension from Twitter. 11 years I've been on Twitter. I got a suspension. Twice this year.
What?
A timeout. The first one was, I mean, I wish I was exaggerating. I posted a photo of Hulk Hogan, okay? And I wrote, how does one achieve this level of tan? Because he has the skin of a hot dog. I mean, this man is so overly tanned. I posted that. It's a joke, obviously. And I absolutely love tanning. So there you go. That's a joke, right? I got a warning for being insensitive with my comments. Somebody possibly reported me for a racial comment. And I got a 24-hour timeout. or a 48-hour timeout, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard me to make a racial comment?
No.
I mean, forget about it in person, but even online? I mean, that's not who I am. The second thing was somebody tweeted something about 5G, and I wrote, and I made, and I alluded at the joke about the idiots that believe that this illness is being caused by 5G. Like, how does one have that mindset? Right. And I got a 48-hour thing for spreading misinformation.
I think they might have misunderstood what you were talking about. I mean,
I mean, and I'm looking at this and I'm like, okay, well, is it an algorithm? Is it someone reporting me? And why can't I just be like, hey, guys, hey, you made a mistake here. All you know,
we gotta move past
this. I know. Can't solve this problem. I know. So it's bizarre. All that
I had this
bizarre
on my list, but it was under social media.
Okay.
Misinformation.
What else do you have?
Well, I had the TikTok Huawei stuff, right? This crazy FUD attack on Chinese companies by the United States. I mean, this is just our country fearing they're going to lose their technological leadership, and they're claiming that you never know, they might do something evil because they're Chinese. They're different. You know, they're the argument, when the argument is they're different from us, thus they are evil, that's racism. I'm sorry, that's just racism.
Yeah.
And there's never been any evidence. Any
well, the youth of this country is going to obviously be corrupted by by the propaganda of twerking on TikTok.
Okay, so I don't give a crap about TikTok. That thing could disappear tonight. I wouldn't care less. But I have a bigger issue with Huawei. Not so much for the networking stuff. I feel like countries should be able to evaluate Huawei networking for its security or whatever on their own and make their own decisions. That's fine.
Yeah.
Huawei certainly has a checkered history with reliability and quality on the networking stuff. But here's the problem. I cover personal technology. Huawei makes the best phones in the world, and we can't buy them. You know. And by the way, maybe we could buy them on some kind of a black market, a third-party site or something like that. But now we can't even get Google software on them, so they're useless. I care very much about smartphone photography. Huawei has the best smartphone cameras, period. Bar none, is not even close. And yet the phones that came out this year don't have Google services, don't have Google software. They're useless. And that sucks. And that's something horrible that we did as a country to a company. Like a unilateral attack on a single company by a country is not unprecedented, but it is unusual. And
well, here's a question.
No evidence.
Didn't we, I could be remembering this totally wrong. 2013, didn't we do something similar with another, was it ZTE? It was another
Chinese, but ZTE is the networking. We went after ZTE.
Well, oh, we did. Okay.
And by the way, we're still, I think they're still on the list, ZTE is. The problem is what I already said, but there's also this kind of arbitrary nature of it. If we as a country, the United States, are going to decide that China is evil and we can't allow their technology to propagate, you know, at least inside of our country, then we need to go after Chinese companies in general. But there's all these wishy-washy things there. Every single Xbox and PlayStation and iPhone and whatever else you choose to talk about is made in China. So I guess that's okay. You know, U.S. country companies are able to save money by manufacturing things in China instead of somewhere else. And there's no problems there. We're not going to worry about that stuff. It's just arbitrary. That's all. So I'm part of the issue I had with the previous topic is that I'm fact-based, you know, and what that means is I, like any human being, I form opinions based on the information I have, and it's not always complete. It's not always right. And what that means is that over time, I may change my opinions about things as I learn more about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And,
well, you're a well-rounded human being, Paul.
I guess so, but whatever. I'm really interested in facts. And one thing that's never come out in this Huawei case, not once, not ever, not anywhere, is this notion that we have some evidence that proves that these guys have done anything wrong ever, even one time. And related to the topics I just talked about, Huawei is, like any big corporation, has done horrible things. Of course they have. Samsung has done horrible things. Microsoft has. Apple has. They all have. But as far as like international espionage, I'd like to see some evidence. I live in a democracy. I should be able to see that evidence. But at the very least, I should be able to hear from one of our many allies, someone, some premier, some prime minister, some president, some dictator, step up to a microphone and say, look, the United States has provided us with compelling evidence that Huawei has done something wrong. And that's why we're excluding them from our networks. No one has ever said that because the United States has never done that. It doesn't exist.
The fear of
FUD. It's just FUD.
The fear is sometimes worse.
It's xenophobia and it's racism. And I have a problem with that. So
it's, I mean, on forget about reliability, but you know,
yeah,
I grew up during a time that nobody would buy a Korean car. You're going to die in that thing.
Or a Japanese car if you want to go a little older. I mean, remember, in the wake of World War II, Japanese stuff was crap. It was considered crap. It was toys. And this is everything from electronics to cars.
Yeah, in 20 years, they turned it around.
Yeah, and that these giant, impressive companies have come out of this, you know, Sony and the electronic space in Japan anyway, and obviously, you know, Honda, Toyota, et cetera, and for cars. And then, and one of my... one of my memories that I'll never forget, I was shopping. I was going to buy my first car, and it was obviously going to be a used car. But my dad heard about a new company called Hyundai, and this is 1987. Hyundai had just come to the United States. They were supposed to be inexpensive, Korean, which was very unusual for that time. Now we have several Korean car makers, obviously. And we went down to check it out. And it was a little piece of crap, you know, paper thin hood, and it was terrible. But the guy opened, I'll never forget this, the guy opened the hood, you know, put down the little rod, you know, to hold it up because it was a piece of crap. And this tiny engine is sitting in the middle of the empty space inside of the hood. It's just, you could see air all around. You could see down to the ground.
And what was it, an XL? Honda XL?
Yeah, the very first one. XL. He said, I'll never forget, this is amazing. He goes, look, I know you're probably worried about the quality of the car, but he goes, the good news is this is a Mitsubishi engine.
Yes, it was. It was a Mitsubishi engine.
And my dad and I looked at each other and we were like, is that good? Like, we were like, what are you talking, Mitsubishi engine? I know they make televisions. Like, what are you, Mitsubishi? But Mitsubishi makes cars. I mean, obviously, yeah, they still do. But anyway, at the time, we were just like, I didn't buy one, by the way.
Yeah, it was a, I believe they came in three variants, a 1.2 liter, a 1.4 liter, and a 1.6 liter Mitsubishi.
Yeah, I don't remember, but
Rear drive. They were rear wheel drive.
The other experience I had was that, much like that, was much later in life, 10 or maybe 15 years later, probably 10 years later. Volkswagen had a car called the Fox, and the Fox was a, it was below the Jetta, but it was a four-door sedan. It was a small car, and it, from a distance, it looked, you know, it looked kind of nice. And I kind of liked the interior a little bit, and I was like, this is interesting. And I went down to the Volkswagen dealership with Stephanie to look at it, and the guy said, pound for pound, this is as safe as any Volvo. And I said, yeah, but it only weighs like half as much as a Volvo. Like, I mean, so does that mean it's half as safe? He didn't have an answer.
Interesting. So I have something controversial on my list here.
Really? Yeah. Now you have something
controversial? Now I have something very controversial. Okay. I'm going to say electric cars. Yeah. For a reason here. This was, and I don't know if a lot of this has to play with the fact that obviously COVID happened and manufacturing slowed down tremendously. I'm sure that has something to do with it. But very interestingly, this year was the year everybody was gloating that it's going to be the boom of electric cars. Obviously, Tesla is a juggernaut now, and we didn't drive anywhere. But Tesla, you know, they announced their that pickup truck, and then Chevy was having one, the Mustang electric hybrid crossover.
Which, by the way, looks pretty cool.
It does look pretty cool. And but yet another year has gone by, and this is not even now with Tesla being what it is. Yeah. I find it interesting that a General Motors and a Ford and a Toyota haven't come out with the product, you know, the car.
I don't know. I feel like electric cars are inevitable.
It's going to happen. I mean,
yeah, it's happening. I think it's taking longer. It's, you know, I don't know. Electric cars are a lot more viable and realistic than self-driving cars, which are often the same thing, right? But the problem I have with electric cars isn't so much about the cars themselves. It's about everything else in the world, right? So I've been working from home for 25 years. And one of the things that's been both amusing and distressing to me is observing everyone else suddenly doing what I've been doing for over two decades, complaining about the things I've been complaining about for that whole time. So for example, we're all home, we're all working from home, 7 o'clock in the morning, all the trucks roll into the neighborhood and the loudest imaginable lawn machinery starts up. And everyone's mowing their lawn, driving around in these Star Wars vehicle looking things. And I've always been like, why does this stuff have to be so freaking loud? And when you think about like the rest of the world beyond cars, why aren't those machines electric? Why aren't the shipping trucks electric? Why aren't all the buses and cities electric? Why, you know, it kind of goes on and on and on.
Yeah.
And getting cars into that space is important and it's happening, like we said, but it can't be the end of it. Like to me, it's everything else.
Yeah.
You know, why are we just doing cars? I mean, I know we're not literally just there are electric bikes and I think there are electric motorcycle type things and so forth, but it's very small.
I think it's a number of things, right? Like right now I believe Ford has some announcement regarding battery technology. And this has been the problem, right? We've spoken about that. For years, as long as we've done the show, my father is one of these people in my entire life, and he's a big gearhead, right? He was a mechanic. He is so into electric cars, right? And he's really into better battery technology. And the problem is battery technology has not exponentially improved over the last... I mean, listen, I'm going to say 20 years because this technology, lithium ion technology, has been around forever, but we're doing better at it, but it hasn't. I mean, like the computer processing boom, right? Like once the ball started rolling, Paul, things change really quickly. This has been a very slow process. And there's many factors here. One, it has a lot to do with the old guard really not wanting this to happen. You know, if you're a General Motors or a Ford, do you want to redo your entire 100-year process? You don't.
So
you really
hold on
you,
one
you
second because
yeah.
the problem you just described is the problem with Intel.
That yes,
these are companies that have been really successful doing this one thing, and their whole process is based on funneling everything through this one thing. And when confronted by the world changing, those kinds of companies, just like people too, we're all the same, right? They're all companies run by people. But I mean, we just can't adapt to it, right? I think that's one of the things that makes the Microsoft story so interesting because they did adapt to it in ways that Intel didn't. And then for cars, you can look at Tesla as, you know, the Apple type disruptor. They're not going to be 80% of the market in a few years, right? They're going to be 8%. You know what I mean? Because they're the guys that made it happen. But eventually the established players are going to, some of them at least, so some of them will fail, of course. But, this is going to happen.
Yeah. It will happen. I hope so.
It will. No, it will. I mean, it has to.
No, I hope like soon. Like that. By the way, that stigma, do you remember that bizarre stigma that like electric cars aren't that fast, they're slow? I'm like, these things are unbelievably fast. The slowest.
Zero to 60 perspective, there's nothing faster.
Have you seen a current electric car that has a 0 to 60 under like 3.5 seconds? No.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's 4 seconds or less. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's unbelievable. Yep. I mean, my Mustang, you know, the American in me, I have a 5-liter Mustang.
Sure.
Loud. I'm getting like 7 miles a gallon.
Andrew, first of all, you're clearly a 50-year-old man on the inside.
So I am. I understand. It's a 307, by the way, Paul, not a 302. I have a 307 5-liter.
307.
Yeah.
Okay. So you have like fuzzy you have the extra GPU core. It's not the MacBook Air. It's the MacBook Pro.
Yes, I have the MacBook Pro. But, you know, like, because I love this stuff, but, you know, I'm probably going to be one of those guys that's like, no, nothing better than American engines, nothing better than American power, 5-liter. My LS1, you know, like, I grew up around that.
Those guys will be interested in the new Mustang, which, by the way, goes 0 to 60 in under 4 seconds. And it, you know, the Mach-E thing, whatever it's called. Yeah.
My friend, she just got one of the, the crossover Tesla, the Model 3, I think. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what a stupid looking car, right?
I don't know. That's actually my biggest problem with the Tesla is I think their cars are ugly.
You know what? The Tesla S looks nice, like their big sedan. Okay, yeah, that one looks okay. good. But the other ones, like,
the rest of them are garbage. It's just, it's a jelly bean with wheels. Okay, you know?
So I drove this thing, Paul. Yeah. I've never driven anything like that. Like, it was.
Yeah, no, it's like daunting. You're taking a rocket to the moon, and the G force is hitting you when you take off. It's amazing, but
like,
it's still instant power.
It's all wheel drive. It's technologically like 10 to 15 years ahead of what anybody else is doing. I was blown away by this thing, but I never bought it.
I look forward to owning the Ford version of it.
Yeah. So yeah. I'm curious.
That's all I can say to that.
I'm curious. It's going to happen.
About Tesla, but yeah, I think so.
I'm glad that now we know where we're headed. Like, there was a lot of that hydrogen power talk and everything. Like, now we know.
Well, are we going to be like 20 years of hybrid vehicles or whatever? And it's like today, I'd say no. I think we're going to go right by that.
Yeah. What do you have on your list? You want to do some rapid fire before?
Yeah,
we
I couldn't come up. I didn't find the name of this. I apologize. But remember back in probably September, Amazon announced an indoor drone.
Yes.
And it's got the little stick coming out of the bottom of it. And the idea is when it detects no one's home, it will fly around your house and just patrol your house. And then I think you can send it up and watch video of your house, make sure no one's there.
Yeah, it was almost like it was like an April Fool's device.
Yeah, you're like waiting for them like to do the presentation and be like, "Oh, you're just kidding. Who would ever want something like this? It's ludicrous." On the flip side, this is not one of the best things of 2020, but I feel compelled to mention this. Amazon also announced something called the Halo Fitness Band.
Yes,
and it doesn't have a display. The New York Times has undertaken a unilateral attack on this thing. It's crazy. It's like it's the weirdest thing I've ever seen. Their technology reporter finally got one. I think he just bought it normally because you have to wait. There's like a waiting list. So he didn't do it until earlier this month. I reviewed it, you know, a month and a half ago or whatever it was. But he describes this thing as the most invasive, horrible thing in the world. And for two reasons. You can take a body scan and then you upload your body image to Amazon, which is like, oh my God, who would ever want to do that? And the other thing it does is it listens to your voice. And it gives you a report on what your tone is. The idea being that if you're too aggravated all the time, you might want to tone it down or something. So this drove this guy nuts. And then it made their list of the worst technology of 2020. This guy is wrong. So first of all, those two features that I just mentioned, the body scan and the voice recording, are both optional. And you have to do them explicitly. They're not on by default and you turn them off. Like, you have to do it. You could try it and see how it works. And if you don't like it, you don't have to do it. But honestly, that device works great. And for a lot of, see, I use the screen. So like when I work out, when I go to the gym, it tracks some things automatically. But if I start an elliptical or if I start lifting weights, I use the screen. You know, I'm doing this and I'm starting and I've done this and I'm finishing. And that's how it works. I use a Fitbit. But I think for other people, this is the type of device that I feel like doctors or hospitals would be comfortable handing out to their patients as a way to keep track of how they're doing over time. It does all the heart rate, you know, the normal stuff that everything does. It's not the best of 2020. Like, I wouldn't have put it on my best of list, but it's absolutely not the worst of. I get being fearful of Amazon data collection and all that kind of stuff, but Amazon, like Google with the coming Fitbit acquisition, has been very clear that you own this data. It doesn't get used for anything else. If you want to delete it, you can delete it. They've done what they can do for that kind of thing. And there's nothing wrong with it. It's just not for me personally, but
I think Amazon's data collection. If your purchases ever leaked, you would know so much about an individual.
Well,
you know,
that's a good point, but I mean, there again, like, you know, not that my order list is like published online for anyone to see it, but what do I buy on Amazon, right? I mean, I bought headphones and I buy coffee. I bought the shirt I'm wearing. This is an Amazon Essentials cheap shirt. This thing cost about $12, and when it gets stained, I just buy another one. You know, I probably have 25 of them. I buy phone cases. I bought a rechargeable battery for my Xbox controller. I mean, it's exciting stuff.
Do you and Steph share an Amazon or no?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah. Yes. It's the same account. I don't know how this works, but
I don't like sharing mine.
What do you mean?
So I so Jesse.
You mean like the literal same email address?
Yeah, yeah, like the same account.
So we use the same account, but she goes in through her address.
Okay.
So they're actually tied together.
But you don't see her purchases.
That's right, and she doesn't.
Okay. So yeah. Christmas gets ruined every year because Jess and I use the same account.
There's a way to do that. You should have her. Stephanie did this. I don't know how you do it, but she connected. She created an account, connected it to mine, and uses this, you know. Well, I was going to say it uses the same payment.
Well, I ended up making my own account separately and doing that. Right. But you know, like it kind of jumbles up the algorithm for me.
You might want to time together for like rewards purposes.
Hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Or to share the Kindle library or whatever. Anyway, yeah, there's a way to do it.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Any other quick ones you got?
Yeah, 5G.
Oh yeah, deployment of 5G
absolutely has not lived up to its promises this year. 5G might be. I should have thought of this ahead of time. It might be one of the most overhyped technologies of all time. And the sad thing is, I feel like eventually it's going to really matter. But the reality of 5G today is that there are two major variants of it. One of them just works like 4G and it's everywhere. And honestly, in many cases, it gets lower speeds than 4G. And the other one is that mmWave thing that only Verizon has in the United States. And it's like you have to be perfectly centered up to the satellite on a clear day.
Hold on,
a shadow or behind it, yeah, it doesn't work. And the promise of this thing is that, like, this is the story. This is the ultimate 5G fantasy. Is you're standing in line to board a plane, which we didn't do in 2020, and all of a sudden you're like, oh crap, I forgot to download something on my iPad so I can watch it. And if you're on a 5G connection, you could go to Netflix and download an entire series, like 10 shows. In 37 seconds or something like that. And the idea is that's all downloaded, and then you get on the plane and you're offline and it's there and there you go. You're flying across the ocean. It's fine. That's fascinating. But the reality of these cellular plans that everyone has, like, I don't know if you did this publicly, but you were talking about it to me privately, is that they're really expensive and they're not unlimited despite their names.
Oh,
so if you downloaded a Netflix show on your 5G connection before you got on a plane, when you landed, you would discover you have no more data left.
Yep.
And also your bill is like $300.
Yeah.
And depending on the system you're on, the carrier, you might not be able to do anything about it. Like Rich Woods was complaining, like he had hit his, I think it was T-Mobile limit. And he's like, fine, I just want to pay $20 and get another gigabyte. And they're like, yeah, you can't do that. You got to wait till you're on 2, you know, whatever it is, 3G or something until next month. And he's like, but I'm on day 5 of the month. It's like, I just made a mistake.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, sorry.
Sorry.
And that's the dark side of 5G that no one's really talking about. But if they ever do fix 5G, you better hope they come out with real unlimited plans.
Well,
because
you hit the nail on the last one before we wrap it up. But, I was going to go with the carriers on my worst of. And I'm going to explain to you a scenario that played out for me. And I'm not saying that this is I'm accurate
Is this what you were complaining to me about?
My conspiracy. I have a conspiracy here. This is an absolute conspiracy. So when I got the iPhone 11, my wife also got it too. And it was a time that they were doing their new Verizon plans, right? Yep. So when I went with my unlimited phone, I'm like, I just want to get a new phone. Somehow my phone went on the starter unlimited plan, right?
So I this, by the way, is itself ludicrous.
Okay.
Unlimited plan.
This one is on whatever unlimited. This is on the starter unlimited, and my wife's is on the Play More unlimited. So I'm like, okay, what difference does it make? I'm like, I don't know what it is. I looked at the spec. It was like, do you want to stream HD content? I'm like, I really don't consume a lot of HD video on this thing. So I just let it be. I didn't even bother. But over the summer, because I'm home, I'm sitting in my backyard, and I can't even stream Spotify, right? Like, there's no service. I can't be on TikTok. TikTok is another great example. I can't scroll TikTok because the service is abysmal, the 4G service. And I can't figure it out because it's not always like that. It's normally really good. And it's been like this for months that my 4G is abysmal in my house, at work. It's frustrating because on this phone, perfectly fine. On this one, terrible. Like right now I have 5 bars, okay? Rarity.
Yeah.
I never had 5 bars. I had like 2 bars tops, nothing. Mm-hmm. So I was like, you know what? I need to have a hotspot because I like to have a mobile hotspot, especially for my car. So I'm like, I need to upgrade now to have a hotspot because the starter plan doesn't have it.
No.
I went and I updated to the $55 one instead of the $35 one. Mm-hmm. What do you know? 5 bars. I'm getting 100 megabits down. I'm getting all of a sudden, it's almost like they were, and I'm not saying they are doing this. I know that they do network prioritization, and I don't know if this is what it is, but my service became totally like unbelievable from just changing the plan. And I don't have any logic. I don't understand how that even happened.
You're paying $20 more a month. See, it's a pay for play.
But is that a thing? This is a question I'm asking the audience.
So I didn't say this to you at the time, I don't think, but what went through my head, maybe I did say this, but the thing that went through my head was this isn't why it's weird for many years. Well, no, not many years, for 3 years-ish, I haven't been using like a major carrier. I switched to AT&T in 2007 to get on the iPhone. At one point, I had multiple AT&T accounts because I was testing phones, and that seemed like it made sense. And then in, I want to say 2015, probably, but if not 2016, I switched to Google Fi. And since then, I've been on these, what are they called, NVMOs or whatever, these smaller kind of pseudo carriers. Now I'm on Mint Mobile, but anyway, I look at the way Verizon in particular. They're in many ways the worst one, but you use them, you know, you live in New York, you want the best connection. Obviously, they have the best network and all that stuff. There are reasons people use it. But like the experience you had recently is not exactly why, but is kind of why I don't use any of the major carriers, because that's what they do. Like they're just, it's stupid. And most people wouldn't even know that it could be better.
So I thought going nuts, right? Like I don't want to talk about it on the air without me trying something. So you know what I did? I have another phone on my plan. Same exact thing. You know what I did? I downgraded it, this one, to the starter plan. Mm-hmm. And guess what, Paul? Service is shit. So is this a fluke? Is this a glitch? I don't know. All I could tell you is since November of last year, I have been barely able to do anything on Wi-Fi, on LTE on this thing. And all of a sudden now, I have 100 megabits down and I have about 60 megabits up.
Right.
But it does say network prioritization. So to me, that's exactly what it would mean, that I would have network priority to hit certain towers or get more speed allocated to me.
I think you need to start a Verizon conspiracy theory channel on YouTube and then monetize it somehow and then use other people's videos and images and to see if anyone complains.
Can I start it off by saying like, what is up guys? Andrew here. And today we're talking about evils of Verizon. What's up, dog?
Yeah. Put your hat on backwards.
I will.
Have like a Verizon logo with a line through it.
That's actually a great idea. All right, Paul, let's wrap it up. You want to do like 10 minutes of a bonus show?
Sure.
Okay, perfect. There you go. I got a sure from Paul. Guys, if you're watching this live, stay tuned. We're going to continue a couple more minutes of our bonus show. If not, if you listen to the podcast, I thank you for subscribing to the podcast. This was a bizarre year for nearly every single person on this planet. This is the last show of the year. And my God, I hope 2021 brings you everything you imagined 2020 would bring. Listen, guys, it's going to get better. It's going to get better. Everything is fine. It's going to get better. I say that to myself every day just to get out of bed at this point. But if you enjoy the show, hey, help us out. Subscribe to us on Patreon, patreon.com/whatthetech. You could go there. We do our bonus show each week. It's as little as $1 per episode. You can fund us and it helps. You know, I got to pay. Suncast has been a lifesaver this year. This guy has worked so hard at producing all our content. You know, it helps pay him. It helps do our upgrades. I lost another camera. My daughter, by mistake, knocked over my Sony A7 II, and it's totally dead. And the repair is going to cost me as much as it's going to cost to get a new one. So We still need to do upgrades. I mean, that's just the nature of it. What are you going to do? You can't get mad. It was an accident. So you're that goes to funding this, to building this network and building the shows. And we have a lot of cool stuff coming up this year. Again, Paul, I want to say this. I'm so grateful for you. I'm so grateful that we do the show. I really am. One of the best people in my life. And I truly appreciate doing this with you all these years, honestly. It's been, this was supposed to be a one-off. You were supposed to come on once.
Yeah.
And then it turned into this, and I'm extremely grateful.
I became
that
a barnacle on the edge of the ship.
You did, and it's your show. It's not, you're not a guest, it's your show. So, I absolutely love you guys, everybody that watches, and I thank you, and listen, I'll see you in the new year. We'll do some cool stuff. If you're watching live, stay tuned. We got What the Talk coming, so we'll see y'all next time. Adios, amigos.